This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History, premieres May 9th, streaming on Hulu.
Horror movies and Catholicism have gone hand in hand for what seems like forever, and the genre shows no signs of slowing down. The new movie, Immaculate, is the latest entry, and it stars Sydney Sweeney as an American who joins a convent in Italy. But then she somehow winds up pregnant. Is it a divine miracle or something sinister? I'm Aisha Harris, and today we're talking about Immaculate on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu with Black Twitter, A People's History from Onyx Collective and Hulu. Directed by Prentice Penny, Black Twitter, A People's History tells the story of how Black voices found a new home online and blossomed into a force for change while laying down some hilarious tweets along the way. From the memes to the movements, see how this powerful community shapes culture, society, and politics. Black Twitter, A People's History premieres May 9th, streaming on Hulu. Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu. This message comes from Capital One, presenting sponsor of the 2024 Tiny Desk Contest. Earlier this year, unsigned musicians from around the country submitted their original songs for the 10th annual Tiny Desk Contest. The panel of judges are hard at work picking standout entries, and you can follow along and choose your favorite videos as well. The winner gets to play their very own Tiny Desk concert, then headline a tour with NPR Music this summer. Want to come along for the ride? Visit tinydeskcontest.npr.org to learn more, then check out the Venture X card from presenting sponsor Capital One. Earn unlimited 2x miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the Wallace Foundation, working to develop and share practices that can improve learning and enrichment for young people and the vitality of the arts for everyone. Ideas and information at wallacefoundation.org.
Joining me today is Jordan Cruciola. She's a writer and producer and the host of the podcast Feeling Seen on Maximum Fun. Hey, Jordan.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I love our horror days together.
I know. It's such a pleasure. It's great to have you here. Well, Immaculate stars Sydney Sweeney as Cecilia, an American woman who's invited to join a convent in the Italian countryside.
I promise to carry myself with grace because I want nothing more than to belong here. I'm afraid I've already messed things up.
But after she arrives, she encounters strange occurrences and mysteriously winds up pregnant. Almost everyone in the convent touts it as a miracle, but Cecilia isn't so sure. Horror, of course, ensues. Immaculate was directed by Michael Mohan, who has collaborated with Sydney Sweeney a couple of times before, including on the Hitchcock-esque thriller, The Voyeurs. Immaculate is in theaters starting tomorrow. So, Jordan, you know, there have been a lot of horror movies involving nuns in the Catholic Church, including recently we had The Nun from the Conjuring universe, Exorcist remake last year. Also, when I went to see this movie, there was a trailer for another nun movie that's coming out, The First Omen. I mean, you are actually the perfect person to have on this show because I am aware of them, but I definitely have not seen any of the newer nun Catholic horror movies that have come out recently. So would you call this a worthy entry into the canon?
I think this is one of the most worthy entries that we've had in years. Mm. It's like 85 minutes long as well.
Tight 90.
So while it is an indulgent piece, it is not indulgent in that way.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I love so much about this movie, and one of the things I love so much about horror generally, is exactly kind of how you summarized the movie when you were like, woman shows up at a convent, gets pregnant, horror ensues.
Yeah.
It is a genre of formula.
Yes.
It is a genre of, like, you can probably guess what happens next. And you can be 80% right about that. But if you have a filmmaker who's willing to give you 15% of shock or surprise or twist, and it really sticks with you and it really punches, like, that is what I love about the genre, is that you can say and you can imagine what comes next, and you can be mostly right about that. But the part that you're not right about is the part that will just leave audiences agog. And that is what I feel like this movie really nails.
Yeah, I like the way you describe that, because up until just now when I heard you talking, I was very much on the fence of, like, how should I feel about the last, like, 10 minutes of this movie, which we won't spoil.
Yeah.
In my notes, I wrote down specifically, oh, it went there. And then also, when it went there, someone in my audience, like, let out the loudest gasp and then was like, what the hell? And it was just like, so, like, it has that kind of ending that I was kind of shocked to see. But everything leading up to that, and again, this movie, what I appreciate is the short, tight 90 minutes. It is a get in, get out.
Yeah.
You're not really going to get characters who are layered and textured. There's not a lot of that happening here. It's like,
yeah,
we meet a bunch of characters, including nuns, and they kind of cycle in and out, and they're there. But they're not really a crucial part of this story in the way that Sydney Sweeney's character is. But, like, I did wonder, does this movie really earn that ending? But I think the way you say it, and the idea of, like, this being a formula, this being a genre, and perhaps, full disclosure, this is not necessarily my formula and genre. So, like, I'm coming at it from that angle.
Sure.
When you put it that way, I do think that, like, 15% that is just, like, throwing everything at the wall and we're just going to see what sticks. I think that does take some guts. And I feel like there are going to be people who might see this movie and be very angry about the way it ends for various reasons.
The sort of sprint to the end of this movie that we won't talk in detail about, I will just describe as heretical.
Yes.
If you are somebody who saw, like, Ken Russell's The Devils, and that is your brand of Catholic horror, this is a movie that's not, like, aspiring to be Ken Russell's The Devils. That's a different situation.
Yeah.
But, like, it is a movie that's going to play in that same sandbox of taboo.
Yeah.
I know a bit about the backstory of the movie where Sydney Sweeney and, like you said, Michael Moen, they made the film The Voyeurs together, which is the most 1994 erotic thriller this side of 1994.
I kind of loved that movie.
I love The Voyeurs. Yeah. And I had connected, the first time I connected with Michael was because we came out in lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, we're live tweeting The Voyeurs. Like, here we go. And I posted that, like, this movie better be incredible trash or, like, I want my money back. And it was that tweet that he reposted and was like, Jordan, you see me. Like, me saying this movie better be trash was him being like, you're my people.
Yeah.
He's not trying to elevate your horror. He's trying to make trash horror look beautiful. Mm-hmm. Coming into this project, Sydney Sweeney was coming off Euphoria season 2, and she really wanted to build on the momentum of the madness of Cassie in season 2, which got her an Emmy nomination, and she wanted to turn the dial up further.
Yeah.
So that is the foundation on which Sydney Sweeney stands going into Immaculate. So if you were like, Cassie was out of her mind in season 2, she wanted to go further out of her mind with more blood in Immaculate.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, let's talk a little bit more about Sydney Sweeney here, because, you know, I think this is kind of, The Voyeurs is sort of a kind of a Rear Window ripoff in a way. And it also stars Justice Smith. So in that movie, she was kind of playing sort of like co-star here. And this is kind of her big, this is my movie. Yeah. Everyone else is secondary.
Yeah.
Do you think she lives up to this, like, horror queen, scream queen title that she's clearly trying to get in some way in this film?
Yes. And here's specifically why.
Mm-hmm.
I am really interested in what Sydney Sweeney's been able to pull off with her career.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's a figure physically that really evokes a kind of, like, Denise Richards. Mm. She evokes, I think, like, a sort of Barbara Crampton kind of horror figure. And Sydney leans into her body.
Yeah.
It is her instrument, it is her job, but she is also a figure that would not necessarily have the allowance to dabble in the range of roles that she has been able to acquire in her career. Like, her navigating, like, I'm going to own this and be the GQ cover that you think I am. Mm. And I'm going to make that rom-com with Glenn Powell. But also, she, Boyers is a genre film where she pushes herself to limits in certain ways. And then she made a made-for-Amazon Blumhouse collaboration movie called Nocturne. Mm-hmm. A thing that you can say absolutely no matter what your position on Sydney Sweeney is that she commits.
Yeah.
And the way she has committed at points to leaning in hard to these like extreme perversions of like beauty and femininity, really wanting to like pull the female grotesque out of her roles. Mm-hmm. I was watching for the first time Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, watching Liz Taylor into this chicken wing in the very beginning of the film. Hideous and greasy, and she's beautiful, but she's eating. And then I watched Immaculate shortly thereafter. And was like, you know what? Sydney keeps coming back to this. Sydney keeps taking sort of these deeply female parts, the mad woman in Euphoria, the like raging coming of age teen in Nocturne, and now this like this young nun coming in to say her vows in the countryside of Italy.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a fascinating thing to decide to do over and over again and low-key enough to still be the rom-com girl.
Yeah.
To still be cast in that Ron Howard credibility picture that's coming up. To still be like, we want her for our superhero movie, regardless of that outcome.
Yeah.
She has defied a pigeonholing that I think a figure such as herself had to fall into historically. Mm-hmm. I think she's a fascinating figure who absolutely can shoulder Immaculate and does.
Yeah. I mean, that Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf comparison is very interesting because when you think about that movie in within the context of Elizabeth Taylor's career, mm-hmm. she was already, you know, like decades into her career.
Yes.
So like that was a choice to make. Mm-hmm. And not that she hadn't had opportunities to be kind of disheveled or like kind of mm-hmm. ugly on the inside, you know, in that way before, but that was like where she really went for it. And mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to see that Sydney is doing that so early in her career and able to do yes. it so early in her career. Usually that pivot is like a little bit further down the line, or it can mm-hmm. be for female actresses, where it's like you've been playing these same roles and then like you finally get a chance to break out and that's like your big moment. But Sydney Sweeney's only in her, what, mid-20s?
Right. Like, I'm going to defy the stereotype of my... There actually isn't really a stereotype to the casting of her because she's
right.
doing this. She just came off of like the hit of superhero rom-com horror trio. And then she's going to produce Barbarella and be in it. And Barbarella is, I think, the figure you would imagine Sydney Sweeney to play.
Yeah.
But then there's someone who's mm-hmm. like daring you to say there's something she can't do. And hey, if a beautiful white blue-eyed woman is the one who can't like dip into any pool she wants, there's no hope for anyone.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point to point out.
This is a category of person who is allowed the latitude in society that almost no one else is.
Mm-hmm.
But Hollywood is a very rigid set of structures.
Yeah.
And it is interesting to watch her do this, especially when she's somebody who wants to make herself so ugly.
Yeah.
Physically and existentially.
Yes.
Yeah. And I, as a genre fan, am like, you are my people. And this is a movie that demands to be seen in a theater with tons of people around you so they can have the reaction like what you saw. A woman yeah. just, they won't. And it's like, oh, but will they?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the other thing I find so interesting about this movie is like, and just Catholic horror movies in general, is they so tiptoe and sometimes just dive into the line of like politics and religion
yeah.
in a ways that like, I don't understand how more super religious people aren't upset about them. Like, maybe they are.
They've been desensitized.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but I don't think it's like, it's not a spoiler to say that this movie feels like it was written for this era.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's interesting to watch this movie. Again, I haven't seen a lot of these nun films, but mm-hmm. like, do the other recent ones, whether it's The Exorcist remake or, you know, the Nun series, like, are they going for it in the way that this film seems to be trying to talk about these ideas of like women's and female femme presenting people's or anyone's bodily autonomy?
And that is why, like, I generally, like, I've seen these movies and The Nun 2 was far more entertaining than the first one. Thank God they stepped up the fun in that. But, like, these movies get bogged down in having no teeth.
Mm-hmm.
The Exorcist remake made me just so sad because it ended and I was like, wait, we didn't start.
Yeah.
How can you imperil children in the way that you're imperiling children in this movie? And I'm still like, Yawn. Mm. And, but like, that's just sort of like how tepid these movies feel. And they also like, yeah. maybe it's because I didn't grow up under like Catholicism, but I watch these movies and I feel like it's a slog when you get into like, but do I still believe? Like, do I still have my faith? It's like, I don't know. Like, if anything, I guess this definitely proves you were right. Like, I don't know if you're still like following God, but if you ever wondered if the devil is real, we certainly know he's here. So that seems like something. And I feel like this movie just cuts the BS with that. Mm-hmm. We have a true believer in Sydney Sweeney's character. We have a true believer who shows up at this place, not because she's seeking to find her faith again, but because she's so deeply affirmed in her faith.
And also they recruited her, apparently, like, which is, you know, the first sign.
Yeah, they went out nun headhunting to find Sister Cecilia. And they were like, we need to bring her talents to our organization over here in Italy. And there's also that period of horror movies so often that is like the gaslighting section, which is happening to her as like the everything's okay, the Rosemary's Baby style, you're fine. Yeah. But in terms of like, this isn't happening to me, it's like, no, it is happening to her. We don't have to go through 10 minutes, 15 minutes in the movie being like, but is it real? Because we just know that it's real. And because we're in an environment where everybody is believing in the miraculous, they're all like, all in, cards on the table. This is 100% real. We got to take care of this Immaculate Conception right here.
Yeah.
So I like how this movie actually does away with what has become some of like the tropes of the Catholic horror film in its present iteration and just says, you know what? Screw it. We want to jump scare you. And I've seen some critique of how this movie like purveys like an abundance of jump scares.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Also, my thing is like, hear me out, guys. Jump scares? It's an art and a science to crush those things and have them be actually good. And also, the jump scares to me prime you for like, you kind of feel like by the end you're in the routine of like the build up, release, build up, release, like the way that jump scare movies get you. And then the last 10, 15 minutes of this movie is like, I know we've been doing the jump scare format for a while now.
Yeah.
Put your popcorn down because now we are going to need you to like just put your whole set of knuckles in your mouth and bite down for like the rest of what's going to happen. And I think it takes that pressure valve release that you've been waiting for because you're tuned to the jump scares by the time the end of the movie comes. But then the gears just keep grinding on it and you don't get a release. Mm-hmm. You just have to sit and marinate in like the, oh my God, she's doing all this. And I think that is a very well-structured version of the jump scare movie.
For me, the jump scares did not work. But I also just feel like the older I've gotten, the less effective they just are for me in general. So, but I agree. What these last 10 minutes do is they leave you on the edge of your seat. Mm-hmm. And that to me was like the best part of this entire movie was those last 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's what you show up for.
Usually that is in any horror movie, that is what you want. Like it's everything builds up to it, but it's also the release at the end, which in the case of this movie is less a release and more like a literal primal scream. Just like, You know what? I feel like I've turned around on this film over the course of this conversation with you, Jordan. I think this is entertaining trash. And considering that it is, again, a very short runtime.
Yep.
It's not a bad way to spend, you know, that 90 minutes.
This is Sydney Sweeney doing a movie that Mia Goth would have destroyed and handling it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Sydney was like, nope, my time.
I'm with you on that. Mia Goth is a great comparison. So if you enjoy a Mia Goth movie, you should definitely check this out.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know what you think about Immaculate. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Jordan Grusciola, thanks so much for being here and helping me, you know, appreciate this film a little more.
That is my calling as somebody who talks about movies and stuff. So this is what I live for. Thank you so much.
Yes, it was great to have you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Hafsa Fatima and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you so much for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Aisha Harris, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Charles Schwab with their original podcast, Choiceology. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind people's decisions. Download the latest episode and subscribe at schwab.com/podcast. Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
It's a high-stakes election year, so it's not enough to just follow along. You need to understand what's happening so you are fully informed come November. Every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast, our political reporters break down important stories and backstories from the campaign trail so you understand why it matters to you. Listen to the NPR Politics Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.